The Danish String Quartet stops in Kalamazoo tonight to perform on the Fontana series at the Dalton Center Recital Hall on Western's campus. The group, which formed in 2002, earned its reputation not through dominating music competitions, although it did win one, but by earning nearly unanimous praise for live performances from music critics at major publications. "Their tone throbs with joy," said the New York Times. Fredrik Schjølin, the cellist of the Danish String Quartet, talked to me about the works on tonight's program and their tour so far.
We started off in Boston, where we went into Pittsburgh and Philadelphia last night, and it's been a nice tour. It's about 2 weeks so far.
Did the Danish String Quartet have a sort of residency to play in New York City for a while?
Yeah, that was the Chamber Music Society of Lincoln Center that had us as a quartet in residence for, I think it was a period of 3 years, where we, on a regular basis, went back and played concerts. So I think we did maybe 3 or 4 concerts there per year. So that was the deal.
And you got to know the musical scene and the city fairly well at that time?
Absolutely. So we usually stayed at the same hotel, in fact, quite close to Lincoln Center, and you know, became like almost like a second home to us.
Where is your home base as a group, or is it even in one place?
Yeah, it is. Now we all live in Copenhagen, in Denmark. Mm-hmm. We all come from different places, though. I'm not Danish at all. I'm Norwegian. So I moved to Copenhagen, I think it's 3 years ago. Before that, I lived in Oslo, and I sort of commuted back and forth. And these three other guys, they are from, you know, different places in Denmark. So only one is from Copenhagen, in fact. So, but we all live there now, and it's a very good place to be. I mean, it's a great city, and just a small thing, like, it's a, you know, we have a very short way to the airport, which is great since we're traveling so much, and it feels right to be there now.
This radio station, which I've worked at since 1992. Mm-hmm. We order some recordings deliberately, but a lot of the time there are things that just show up in the mail. And the so-called Young Danish String Quartet album,
yeah,
with the Nielsen Quartets showed up years ago now. And I still remember,
yep,
how eye-opening it was for two great reasons. One was, I knew Nielsen's music through his symphonies and a flute, mm-hmm, concerto and a string and a wind quintet. So it was brand new to me as quartet music from this great composer. And then the performances on the disc were so passionate. I guess this was before you joined the group.
Yeah, it was. It was my colleague Karl-Oskar Österlin, who was the cellist back then. He left the quartet shortly after that recording, actually. But I know that they had Tim Fredriksen, which is the sort of the old mentor of the group. He has been he was in the former Danish String Quartet. We are now the fourth generation of the Danish String Quartet.
Yes, if you go to Wikipedia,
it will
say there are four versions of the Danish String Quartet.
Yeah, Exactly. So the Tim Fredriksen, who was our teacher, he was in the former one, and before that his father, and before that his grandfather. So but he doesn't have any. Well, he has a daughter that plays the piano, but there wasn't anyone in the family that could inherit the quartet. So when the guys started playing, you know, at I guess they started when they were like 14, 15 years old to play together on a regular basis, and he started to give them lessons, and then after a while they called themselves the Young Danish String Quartet. After Karl Oskar left the quartet and I came in, then you know, the former Danish String Quartet hadn't played for a while, and so the name was sort of free, and we were allowed to take it.
Were you aware of this new group? Had you heard their Nielsen recording, and were you kind of excited about what they were putting out?
Yeah, actually, I knew them quite well because the former cellist and the viola player and the Runa, one of the violins, was studying at the same place as I did in Stockholm, in Sweden. So I knew the guys from there and had listened to their recordings, and I thought they were great, and you know, after Kaloska left, and they knew me from up there, and it was a sort of a natural choice in a way. But it's great, and I got to play Nielsen, which I probably never would have bumped into if I stayed in Norway or in Sweden or wherever. And I think it's actually very, very good music. It's he was, like you said, he was very famous for his symphonies and violin concerto, clarinet concerto maybe, but the quartets, almost, you know, no one plays them. So, but they're actually quite good, I think.
The program you're bringing to Kalamazoo for Friday night gives us a taste of a lot of different things. There's going to be a brand new work that was premiered just last August that you're touring with, a middle period Beethoven quartet, and you're even playing in a folk style, song arrangements that you put together. Let's start with the piece by Rolf Wallin.
Yes, the Swan's Kissing is inspired by a painting, a picture, and the picture is a black swan on a white background with its beak pointing upwards, and to a white swan on a black background with its beak pointing downwards, and in the middle they kiss, and so it's this you know, it's a typical yin and yang picture, or, you know, something to do with balance, dark, white, you know. So that's the sort of basis of the piece. And it's very much like when you look at a picture, I mean, music starts at some point, and then after some minutes, it's finished, you know. But a picture is more like a moment in time, so to speak, and I think Rolf tried to create this moment in time somehow. The basic idea is very simple. It's the first part is striving upwards, just like the black swan is sort of looking upwards. And then we come to a second part, which is a little bit more rhythmical, a little bit more dancing, and quite funny, actually. At the end, it sort of just vaporizes and becomes nothing. So it's this, you know, that's probably where the yin and yang is in total balance.
Speaking of the black and white aspects of the painting, music is printed in black and white. And yet when you listen to the piece, the composer is asking you to frequently travel between pitches as represented in black and white. You often end up in places you didn't start at through microtones or something like that.
Yeah, so there's a lot of microtones in this piece, and it's very carefully described how we should do that. And I think it's a great piece. It's not very deep in a way. it's like a divertimento, or you know, but still. Powerful.
I think you used the word vanishing, or it vaporizes.
Yeah.
That's a great quality to try to capture in music.
Exactly. Yeah.
Before we move on to Beethoven, do you have a list, or does the group have a list of composers alive today that you're interested in working with, and could you drop some names?
Oh, I haven't really given it much thought, but one composer that we did work with already, but would love to do some more with, is Thomas Addis, the British composer. I think he is one of the composers alive today that, you know, he will stand out in 200 years as one of the big ones from our time. I'm quite sure of that, actually.
It's a good time to mention that the very newest Danish string quartet recording features music by Thomas Addis and two other modern composers.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Beethoven's Opus 59, number 2. This is the quartet in E minor, and it begins with two big chords. It goes off into so many places from there. Does he just have to start it somewhere, and those chords were as good a way to start as anything?
Well, I haven't analyzed the piece, you know, into details like that, but say it's a rather typical Beethoven trick to pull off. he has this extreme seriousness, and also it moves into something that is spooky, and you know, a little bit searching, frustration is also a word I would use maybe sometimes, and I really think he felt like that sometimes. It feels like it's very honest emotions that he puts on the table, so to speak. And then, a very, very, very beautiful, touching second movement, and then you had the scherzo, which is where you have this Russian theme in the trio, which, as far as I know, was a request from was he a count, Rasimovsky, some sort of noble, at least, who ordered the commissioned the piece, and he wanted he actually commissioned the three middle quartets, and it was a demand from his side that all of them should have a Russian folk tune in them. So somehow he managed to put that in there, and then, you know, the very light and joyful last movement, which is in C major, although the quartet is in E minor. So everyone expects the last movement to be in E minor. It's also finished in E minor, but just to have this whole opening in C major is kind of a you know, shock in a way.
You mentioned this Russian folk tune, which sets us up nicely for how you've chosen to fill out the concert. This is from 2014, a few years ago now, when you released a beautiful album called Woodworks. And I looked at it pretty thoroughly. You know, I realized you'd all rethought and adjusted your playing to folk styles. You'd done a great amount of detail in the settings and arrangements. Was that divided up amongst you?
Well, mostly me and Rune, one of the violins, does the arrangements. And then we sort of play it and talk about it and maybe do some few adjustments. But we write it down on paper. This time now we have some new stuff, so I think we'll only play new stuff that is going to be on our next recording, which is recorded but isn't out yet. So it's going to be out in the summer, we think.
Before we go, I wondered if you would share with us some of your very favorite concert-going experiences, not performing, but the hearing music.
Oh, well, I have quite a few, actually. I must say that I had the pleasure to listen to Rostropovich, the cellist, before he died, actually three times, and the first time was in my hometown, Trondheim in Norway, and my father plays in the orchestra, and so I went to every rehearsal, and that was back in 96, actually. Mm-hmm. And that was a phenomenal Dvorak concerto, actually. A really, really inspiring moment for me. I've also, you know, I went to, in Stockholm when I was a student, I went to see the Irish band Danu.
Yes, yes, I know them.
Yeah, that was absolutely amazing as well. Recently, we have our own series in Copenhagen that we arranged, and we had the Artemis Quartet just 3 weeks ago, and that was fantastic. So, but it's very, very hard to compare them, you know.
But it is part of a musician's life to get to know their musical world around them too, you know.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And of course, the breweries around them, that would be
but also them, yeah.
here in Kalamazoo, we have probably one for every three people. You will not have any trouble finding a brew in Kalamazoo.
Wonderful, yeah. No, but it's, I don't know, but it's after, you know, have having played concerts for a while, we realized that, you know, we tried everything. We tried wine, and we tried even stronger liquor, but beer is the only thing that you really want after a concert, because you spend some energy, and it's actually you're a little bit thirsty, you know, and beer is very good. So that's why we also decided to make a beer for our own concert series in Copenhagen. So we contacted a brewery and made a beer for the series, and all the artists they love it. So I think we did the right thing.
But we'd have to travel to Copenhagen to drink it.
Exactly.
Okay, I'll put it on my list.
Yep.
Well, here's to the Danish String Quartet and the precious golden beverage. And thank you for talking to me about your concert in Kalamazoo. I hope it goes really well.
Thank you.